They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, so if you're looking for the reason that Russell Westbrook has yet to develop a jump shot, why Derrick Rose has battled injuries, why John Wall is currently sitting out this season, the answer is right in front of me. Rob McClanahan is the author of Network, Training the NBA's Best and Finding the Keys to Greatness. What's up, Rob?
What's up, man? Hey, good seeing you.
I mean, you knew that intro was coming,
yeah, I knew
right?
that was coming, yeah. Thanks a lot, Chris.
I mean, you got, like, you've done shows. I listened to your podcast with Woj. It was it was surprisingly, like, given I know your relationship with Woj was surprisingly respectful and...
Yeah, well, Woj's a respectful guy, unlike yourself.
Well, I figured that whether it was me or Pete Thamel, you were going to get some kind of grief at some point.
It's like the daily group texts I get.
Yeah. You don't start some of them?
True.
Come on, let's be real about that. The book is Network, though. It's terrific, and it describes the life and times of a professional basketball trainer. Rob's been doing this for a long time. His client list is among the very best in the NBA. Russell Westbrook, I mentioned, Rose, Kevin Love, Steph Curry on that list as well. But before we get into some of the stories that you tell in this book, and I read it weeks ago, it's terrific. Your background, you play basketball at Syracuse. Well, I mean, let's be real. You were on the team.
I had a jersey.
Right? You had a jersey. You were on the team. Do you tell people, like, yeah, I played in...
It depends on the setting I'm in. Sweet 16 a couple of times.
Okay.
Yeah. We lost to Michigan State. Yeah, they won it. In Detroit, mind you.
Who was the best players in those teams?
Etan Thomas, lottery pick, Jason Hart, Preston Shumpert, Tony Bland. We had to set my junior year. We started 19-0, and that was the year we were the four seed and played Michigan State that year. But that was probably the best year that we had.
How does the experience? How do you get to Syracuse? How do you get on that roster?
It wasn't easy. I mean, my dad wasn't donating money, so you got to actually earn it. And my freshman year, I didn't make the team, and I worked out with the team the whole freshman year preseason, and they just didn't take any walk-ons. I put on about 25, 28 pounds that summer. Actually grew a couple inches and worked out with the team again, just voluntarily. And ended up making the team, and coach grabbed me and said, pick a jersey number. And he was a walk-on himself, so there was mutual respect immediately. And then I picked number 31, which is a little inside story we talk about a lot. And 31 was Pearl's number. Mm-hmm. But they gave me the jersey. And about 3 months into the season, there's number 15 up with no name on it. And I said to Dave, now the equipment guy for the Patriots, actually, he was at BC, your school. Dave Schoenfeld says, hey, listen, come out to the arena quick before the game. I said, what do you mean? He goes, look up in the banners. I screwed up. What do you mean? He goes, that's Pearl's number. You've been wearing Pearl's number for 3 months.
You didn't even know.
And then I went to 15, which is Melo's number. So, me, Melo, and Pearl are in the same kind of group.
Is Melo's number now retired there, or do they do that?
I don't think, no, it's not retired yet.
Well, I mean, it probably will be. I mean, one, I mean, do you get
rid of them? They've been doing it slowly. Mm. John Wallace is next month. Sherman Douglas, Billy Owens. So
it's kind of tough to retire college numbers. There's so many guys get rolled through that could be.
Yeah.
I guess maybe it's easier.
They wait a long time, I think, to see how you do in the pros.
See if you pan out. But, or it could be the reverse way. Like if you're like a 4 year, guy Tyler Hansborough is a 3 year guy at North Carolina, like that kind of type.
That's true.
But Melo, I think if you win a national championship, if you're there for 1 year.
And it's called the Melo Center where they practice. So I'm sure they'll retire there.
So you get through Syracuse, and when does it occur to you to get into this type of work?
I mean, right at the Syracuse, bam, made a call to Seth Greenberg, got me a job at South Florida. And just being down there, I went on a recruiting trip with Seth to IMG. And, it wasn't big like it is now. And there's doing training with Joe Bunasar at a junior college. They didn't even have a court, but it was like, Tayshaun Prince, Al Harrington, Tyronn Lue, Chauncey Billups, KG, Vince Carter. And I was like, well, you can make a living just working guys out. I just didn't know it existed. And it really didn't back then. You had a few guys here and there, had Tim had Mike open, didn't have like 20 guys, So they're exclusive guys. But I was like, this is kind of cool, thinking nothing of it. Then I left USF coaching, came back to Rhode Island, and I called IMG, hey, can I intern down here? Mm-hmm. I did for 3 straight years. And I just had a niche for it, and I started working kids out locally, and I got Ryan Gomes, my first like ever guy, and Ruben Garces, who played at Providence. Then I got like Telfair, Jared Dudley early, and it kind of just grew. And then Joe opened a facility in Vegas, Impact Basketball, and hired me as right-hand man. And from there, I just kind of took off. I mean, my biggest break probably was with Sonny Vaccaro, getting to ABCD and meeting Rose and Love there. And they
take me through that part of it, though, because, I mean, that is a big break, getting to meet, you know, Derrick Rose, Kevin Love, to, you know, marquee young guys. What stage of their careers were they at then?
They were in between the junior. So that was a summer in between the junior and senior in high school. Mm-hmm. I think they had both committed already to Memphis, UCLA, and I met Stan Love. I just met Reggie Rose. So we had became pretty close through that. And then we all kept in touch, you know, via text, me, Kevin, and D-Rose. And when they went to college, I would go see UCLA games. I saw Derek at the Garden versus Oklahoma. And we just, I don't know, kind of just worked out. And Kevin kept me on when he went pro. I had him sign a deal with Worsaman and Arn Tellem. And Derek ended up signing with them as well. So it kind of just happened. And then Kevin, before his freshman at UCLA, said, can I bring a friend of mine in? He's, you know, he didn't play too much last year, but he's pretty good. I said, yeah, bring him in, this guy named Russell. You know, so that became my main group for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I want to get into to that those two in particular. But when you're going and training college kids, can you make a living doing it at that point? I mean, is it?
No. I mean, luckily I had some stability with just being hired by Worsaman. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, listen, unless the college kid or parent can pay you, you can't do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess you could do it for free. I don't know. I mean, I couldn't because I was working for an agency, but I guess if I wanted to independently, I could. But yeah, I mean, it's more, hey, Kevin, these guys, I'll work you out, and hopefully you keep me out when you go pro. And, you know, fortunately, they were loyal, and they did.
Mm. The I mentioned at the top, the list of guys you work with are marquee names throughout the NBA over the course of their years. But when you look back at the guys you work with at an early stage, was there one that stands out that really surprised you at how well they did, that when you kind of saw them first, got your hands on them, whether it was high school or pre-draft, whatever it was, but and that they elevated to that next level? Anybody stand out to you?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few guys. I mean, one I think, you know, rookie year Tyreke Evans, you know, coming into pre-draft, you know, you could tell he was really good, but he wasn't, you know, a lot of guys in workouts are like, oh, you know, then they go to the game, you're like, you know, just not workout guys, or they're more gamers, or vice versa. Tariq was a good workout guy, worked out, but, you know, he didn't really show anything until he actually got in the game, and his rookie year obviously was unbelievable. Kevin Love is another good example, I think, of, you know, the way he was in pre-draft, and before that, he was kind of a big man, you know, and we always talked about, hey, you can't keep doing this at the next level, you're only 6'8", 6'9", you know, you can't back guys down anymore. So that transition he made was to me, was pretty impressive in the way he's changed his whole game, you know, over the years, really. I mean, all the credit goes to him and his diet and his, you know, his next level professional.
His, I mean, to kind of drill into that, like the fact that he looks the way he does at this point, there were teams that didn't believe that he would ever look like that. I mean, I had one team during that. I was doing a lot of draft stuff back in, what was it, 08, 09? And I had one team in the high lottery say to me that they thought Kevin had an eating disorder. Like they thought he would, he would never, you know, be able to control what his body looks like. But I mean, he's one of the best conditioned athletes in the NBA right now.
It's ridiculous. I mean, and we talked about it. I think after his, you know, second or third year, his knees started to hurt. And I talk about this with Zion. You know, it's the upper body and the power you come down with. It's not really the jumping. It's more when Zion or Kevin Love will come down and affects the knees. So Kevin realized, if I don't lose this weight up top, my knees are going to just be done, and therefore my career is going to be short. But Kevin, the story is with his body, as far as I remember, is I remember around June, a few years back, I want to say 5 years ago, he got an offer to be in the body issue. And he said yes, because it was almost like motivation. I better get my ass in shape, you know, to look good for this body issue. And he went on this, like, diet. It was, like, next level by the minute. He walked in with, like 14 almonds. I mean, I'm not kidding. It was, like, next level stuff. And it was total discipline. And he was just losing weight by the day, getting chiseled. Still had the energy, but there were days, like, yeah, he was definitely, like, ready to pass out. And a great story I have about discipline with him is we took a private jet from L.A. to Dallas for a Niners-Cowboys opening game on his birthday in September. Bunch of friends, whatever. So get in the plane, you know, it's like open bar, it's like chicken wings and pizza. I'm thinking, all right, he's going to cheat today. It was literally his birthday that day. And we get in the plane, and we're all like mounting down, having a drink, and this guy walks on, Kevin, and he's got like this little red little cooler. And he opens a cooler and he gets his kale salad out and his almonds and his cashews and his oil and vinegar. And I'm sitting there like, instead of laughing, most guys laughed. I was like, bro, this is why you are who you are, man. This is like discipline to the next level. Not only eating that, but actually bringing it with him on ice. You know, like that's what it takes. And, you know, he's up to, I think, $280 million of career earnings, more than Wade, Paul Pierce. I mean, a lot of guys that you would think made more than him. And to me, it's just, I talk about Kevin all the time and corporate speaking, all that stuff about how he is discipline-wise. And, like, you know, he looks at it like you walk in an airport, you see pizza or salad. You know what's better for you. What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. You know, and now he's just so dialed in with it. It's ridiculous.
And every time I choose pizza.
Oh, yeah.
I see that at airports.
Most people do.
Literally every time. Thank you. Appreciate that.
That's why you have the hoodie on.
We're gonna go out back and do some suicides after this. There are probably, not probably, there are a lot of people that would want to do what you've done, yeah, that believe, hey, I can be a trainer, I can do this. How did you separate yourself? I mean, is it, how much of it is developing relationships with the players versus...
That's all it is, really.
Okay, go ahead.
I talk about this a lot, you know. I think it's very parallel to any business. I don't know if I'm a good trainer or not. You can ask those guys. But it's more, again, I hold these guys accountable. Like, I never forget, when guys run late with me, I think most trainers, oh, it's okay. You know, Kevin Durant, oh, you're in, oh, it's okay, man. I'm like, no, man. Like, if you, any other job in life, if you're late, one time it's a one, next time you're probably fired. You know, and office job, Russell Westbrook is a prime example of, it's almost like we had a contest, you know, all the time. I'd say 9 a.m., and I'd show up at 8:40, let's say. He's the first workout always. Russell was always the first workout. And he'd be there sitting there, like, where you been? I'm like, oh, we work out in 20 minutes. He's like, oh, I got here at 8:30. Okay. So the next day I show up at 8:30. He's there. What time do you get? 8:20. And it became like, now we're both there at 8 a.m. sitting there like, oh, we don't start till 9. What are we doing? You know, but Russell really taught me how to, you know, being early was actually being on time. And to get back to what you're saying, I just always treated these guys as grown men, not like all stars. And I think since they've been prodigies, they've had yes men around them their whole life. And it's, instead of being like, who do you think you are to me? It's like, you know what? I need that. You know, and I would say, listen, if you're late for the team playing, it's $5,000. So you can either give me $5,000 every time you're late, or we can just be on time. And I think guys wanted that and they need that. I think, you know, there's too many people around these guys saying it's okay. And they're not really taught like an employee or, you know, a grown man. Hey, man, you can't be late. You know, if I was late for them, I'd be gone. Mm-hmm. You know, so for some reason, I don't know, I'll just go back to my dad being lieutenant colonel, what it is. But I just always treated these guys like a grown man and not like a kid. Oh, it's okay, man. It's okay. You're late. So the relationship part is huge with me. I'm not the kind of trainer just like, all right, man, I'll see you tomorrow. See you next summer. I'll send in the invoice. It's like, oh, let's go to dinner tonight. Let's grab a drink. Let's hang out. Mm-hmm. You know, let's go watch a game together. You know, watching the NBA finals with texting. You see that move? And it goes deep, you know, when Kevin Love's, you know, my son's godfather, you know, so to me, when Derek was hurt, when John Wall got hurt, you know, I'm the first one flying out and saying, what's up, grabbing dinner. Not like, you know, some other people might be like, oh, he's done. Or, I'll see them when they get back on court, you know. And you see it all the time, unfortunately. So it goes way deeper than the training with me. Mm-hmm. I think that's why I'm most proud of not getting those guys, but keeping those guys. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not easy to keep these stars when all these trainers come out now and they see different drills on Instagram. Let me try that out. Luckily, these guys are pretty loyal to me.
Mm-hmm. When I asked you about the biggest surprise, I thought you might even go the Westbrook route just because, you know, I mean, you go back to that year, the 08, going to the 08 draft. I don't think anybody had any idea where he was going to go. I mean, he was like, in terms of range, like it was like he wound up going early to Oklahoma City, but they might have been the only team willing to take him that high.
I don't know where he would have went if they didn't take him. The only reason I didn't question it, I was the first one to actually see how hard he worked, and it was like just relentless. I mean, it was just like next level stuff to the point where I had to beg him to take days off, you know, and he didn't really understand that point. Actually, a day off was part of the schedule. It wasn't like me saying, oh, I'm tired, I'm working out. It was more, no, bro, I need you to take Sunday off just so we're good to go on Monday, you know. And if I didn't work him out, he'd go shoot with his dad at UCLA, and he just couldn't help himself. And it was, you know, It was relentless, relentless training. He never took a rep off, and I mean that in the literal sense, that every rep was a game rep. That's why I just saw him always, always improving no matter what. And he didn't care what anybody said. You know, obviously, you know, he doesn't care what anybody says about him, and it just kind of like sparks him even more. Hmm. You know, so, yeah, he'll never...
He operates, man, like, you know, and you know him at a personal level. Yeah. It just... He is one of the least trusting people I've kind of... And maybe it's because he has been publicly kind of cooked a lot,
yep,
you know, in his career, going back to UCLA when, what was it, Darren Collison, the point guard,
yeah,
there, and you know, nobody believed Russ could be a point guard. And then his first couple of years, it's more about what he can't do than what he can. But,
yeah,
I mean, he seems to be as guarded as they get when it comes to players.
Yeah, he... he's critiqued more than probably anyone, you know. But again, I think in the end, it just fuels him more. If you know, I mean, all the stuff that he can't win, and the way he plays, his shot selection, this and that, has he changed? No, at all. And he's going to keep doing what he does. And he looks at it like, I'm going to go 0-18, 18-18. I don't care. That's that's who I am. So. And I think whoever coaches him or takes him on has to realize that that's who he is.
You were actually, I've heard you tell this story a couple of times, but it's interesting. You found yourself kind of in the middle of the Oklahoma City decision on whether or not to take him. How did that come about?
Yeah. I did the pre-draft. I had no way. It was another major break for me. I had basically 8 of the top 15 picks in that draft, and it was insane. So,
do you think people realized, like, when you're in that small gym out there, like, just who was in there?
Oh,
like,
it was insane. Yeah, I mean,
did you ever have somebody like walk by, like, holy shit, that's...
For sure. People definitely went by, like, wait, what? You know, like, the whole lottery's in there. And it was crazy, and that's all due to Arn Tellem and Bob Myers and B.J. Armstrong, those guys. So, but I just got lucky enough to be there and train them. And really, if you include Kevin, it was, like, 9 of the top 15 picks. So, yeah, it was, you know, Troy Weaver is a good friend of mine. You know, he's my assistant at Syracuse, so we go way back, and he trusted me, and I know Sam just from Boston and stuff. So they didn't know if they wanted, like, a Brook or a Russell. Which direction do we go? And I had both guys. Arn Tellem had both guys. And they basically, you know, we did a private workout in L.A. at a private gym in someone's house in Bel Air. And I put through Russell, you know, I would say 40-minute workout. I remember kind of doing everything at the rim, kind of showing that his powerful and his tenacity. And at that point, he didn't have a great jump shot, so I didn't want to show that too much. It was just kind of like alley-oops and dunks and floaters and, you know, mid-range stuff. And we kind of went out to lunch after, me, Sam, and Troy, and I was like, listen, you've been training Brook and Russell for the last 2 months. This is a week before the draft, maybe even less. That was Russell's second workout with them, I think first private one, one-on-one. And I think they were very torn. You know, and my thing was, well, you need a point guard or a big, and they needed both at that point. And, you know, I was definitely in the middle of it. I didn't know how to answer that because at the same time, you know, I'm working for the agent that represents both. So if I got back to him, so I kind of just gave them, you know, my 2 cents. I think I said to Brooke about Brooke that he'd be a scorer for the next 10 years in this league. I really believe that. And with Russell, I kind of gave him the answer I just gave you. Like, this guy's going to keep getting better. And he doesn't give a shit of what anybody thinks of him. And I think it's a good trait. And that was kind of my 2 cents. And I said, I'm not making a decision for you. But I'm just telling you right now, they both go to picks. Russell's going to continue to improve. And he's got his chip on his shoulder that I've never seen anything in my life. You know, he's never been recruited. You know, his freshman year, he didn't play. You know, it goes back to even the UCLA-Memphis game where Ben Howland wouldn't let him guard Derek. And he cooked Collison, and they won. You know, so this chip on his shoulder, I think it was going to last for a long time, and I was dead on with that. And, yeah, and obviously they went with Russell. So, yeah, that was a crazy time for me because I'm, you know, 3 years prior to that, I was teaching dodgeball in Rhode Island. You know, now I'm in the middle of, a major decision for a Seattle franchise, you know. So,
Did you think sitting there in that meeting that they wanted you to convince them of Russell? I mean, that was clearly the bigger roll of the dice.
Yeah, you could tell they were convinced, but yeah, it's almost like they needed a little nudge, you know, and a confirmation of that, in a sense. And, you know, I think they had just gotten hired, like they were 2 or 3 years in. They were about to move to Oklahoma City, you know, so it was a major decision for this franchise. But, yeah, I mean, again, like you said, Russell went from, like, oh, maybe late first round to a month later, boom, is he top 10?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a draft pick if you screw up at 4 and no one else maybe was going to take Russell after that until, like, maybe 12, let's say, you know, it'd get you fired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I said to them, listen, you can – go both ways. I never said, you know, Russell, I don't know, he might not pan out. I was the first one to be like, this guy is going to be a pretty damn good player in this league for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just the intensity.
Yeah.
Compelled, pushed him all the way up there. How we kind of joke at the beginning, but are you surprised that, you know, all his desire and his talent never has become to this point a reliable 3-point shooter? Like, that's. Is it surprise you, given how hard he works, that's never kind of become part
of
his?
Yeah, I am surprised. I think some of it is, I think he can make a three at a decent clip if he wanted to, but I think it's shot selection too with him. But again, that's just who he is. And it's like, you know, if you start toning Russell down, he's not the same player. So I think you just take what he gives you. You know, I think if he took better shots, he'd be more of a, you know, 30, 35% 3-point shooter because he makes them. I mean, in workouts in the past, I mean, I know it's workouts, but he makes them at a pretty good clip. You know, he sets his feet, he follows through. I think sometimes when he's shooting, you know, a step back, fade away 25-footer with two guys on him, that's a much more low percentage shot. So I am surprised, but again, it goes to shot selection, you know, and that's just Russell is Russell, you know, and that's why you got to love him or hate him.
I tell you, I may always maintain that him averaging a triple-double for 3 straight seasons, you're never going to see that again.
No, and no one talks about it.
No, but about because that one it's MVP now year. Become, it's like, well, he's high volume, so he's supposed to put up the... We've had high volume players
look
before.
Look at Doncic.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean...
Look at James Harden. They're not averaging triple doubles.
Everyone's looking at Ben Simmons, and Simmons will do it. No, he's not.
No.
Not going to... He might... I will say Ben Simmons... There could be a player that averages it for one season. There will never be a player that does it for 3. No way. It's Joe DiMaggio 56 game.
But no one's been even, like, close.
No.
I mean, yeah, you have guys averaging like 17, 6, and 7. Do you know how hard it is to up that to, you know, 10 and 10? It's, you have to get every single night 10, 10, 10. Like, that's amazing. I think Russell it wasn't even 10. It was like 11 assists and like 10 and a half rebounds. Like, it wasn't like he just made it. Like, the last – I always talk about this all the time. 3 straight years and no one even talks about it. You know, and it's not only the fact that he did it, but the energy you have to give every night to actually get that. And he's not playing like 30 games. He's played 77. So it's mind blowing to me. It just is kind of overlooked. But I mean, I guess that's maybe how good he is. I don't know.
So you another guy you connected with early on, or at certain points of his career, Steph Curry, wrote the foreword to your book.
Yeah.
There. How did you connect with Steph?
Yeah, he was doing a commercial in L.A. This is pre All-Star years. And his agent, Jeff Austin, called me and just said, hey, he's in town for 3, you mind working him out? I said, yeah, sure. So he came to this gym in Bel Air. We worked out, and he talks about in the forward. I mean, right away, the first 10 minutes, I'm like talking trash and saying, let's go, pick it up. And he was like, well, who is this guy? I think he is. This guy was slick back here, barely playing in college. But again, I think guys like that, you know, and he liked it, and he engaged in it very quickly. He stayed, I think, that whole week. And the next thing you know, we're working out a ton in LA. He's flying me to San Fran, and we just kind of hit it off the court too, obviously. And so I think that was more of it too, the relationship part. I mean, I was very honest with him, and we did a lot of film early on, and he liked that. And you know, he started playing pretty well, and he kept me around, and I started running his top 30 camp in San Fran. And yeah, man, he's one of the most humble human beings you'll ever meet in your life. Forget basketball. I mean, you know, he's just next level guy. It's so I've been lucky to be around him, and he's built that culture at Golden State. Him, no one else.
Mm-hmm.
No one else.
Did you know, I mean, you can't know if the guy's going to be a multi-time sort of MVP type of player, but I mean, this was a guy that, you know, another guy that came in with some questions. I mean, he was the 3rd point guard drafted in his draft. Minnesota passed on him twice.
Johnny Flynn and Rubio?
Rubio. Johnny Flynn and Rubio.
Amazing.
In with Steph Curry sitting there, I think he went 7 that year, 6 or 7 in that year's draft class. I mean, but he was a skinny kid coming out of Davidson, and no matter what he did in the NCAA tournament, there were certainly questions about whether he could hold up physically in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm one of those guys. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I didn't know how well he'd do. Again, being skinny, high-volume guy, you know, every play set up for him at Davidson. I thought he'd be a very good player. I don't think anyone saw this coming. And the main thing with Steph was he had good years and games per se, but he was never healthy. I mean, his ankle, people don't realize how bad his ankles really were. Mm. I mean, they were bad. And once he got healthy and locked himself in, and Steph, you know, Steph was one of those guys, he has nothing off the court that's really affecting his focus. You know, and I always say this about Steph and why he is good, because he's so, you know, stable and family focused off the court. When he gets on the court, and he's got nothing to worry about. He's just out there hooping. And when he got healthy, man, and, you know, and he got the players around him, and Kerr did a great job with him, obviously, you know, it just kind of all clicked at once. And you could see it around, you know, that first All-Star year where the confidence came back. I think he was so worried about his ankles and was very, like, getting the lane, like, worried about, you know, hurting it again. And listen, he signed that deal. Everyone made fun of that deal for 11, you know, 11 a year for 4 years. Oh, yeah, what a bad deal.
Wow. Biggest steal deals. It enabled them to do what they did a few years back.
Everything was, you know, just came full circle, because when he signed the deal and then he started doing well, why would he sign that deal? Well, people don't forget how hurt he was. Mm-hmm. That was security for him. And again, like you said, enabled him to sign all these guys and win three championships. So it all worked out well. But yeah, man, he's just, no one saw this coming. But once he got that swag back per se, it was kind of over. You know, and everything worked out with, you know, the way Draymond played and Clay, and, you know, Clay, you know, the defender he is and you know, was in those years, helped Steph, you know, maybe save some energy, you know, so it just kind of all worked out.
When you first saw Steph shoot, I mean, could you see right away, like, oh, yeah, all right, really, this guy.
He's the easiest guy in the world to work out. Like, I don't even get a rebounder. I'm the rebounder. Usually I have an intern rebound for me. It was just like, let me stand like the hoop. I mean, I've seen this guy make, you know, shoot 100 threes and make 97, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, he flew me to London 2 years ago to work him out. His wife had something over there for a week prior to training camp. And we found a gym, and it was one of those gyms that was like cement floor, you know, like a bad rim. It was just the whole setup was not, you know, conducive to an NBA player. But you would think, okay, he might not, you know, shoot the way he usually does on this double rim net, you know. But it was like same thing. I'll never forget. It was like 97 out of 100 threes. And like, it wasn't like, oh, it's a good day. No, it was an average day. It was like, he's, you know, he's got the genetics obviously from his father, and but he works at it. I mean, he works at it. I mean, every single day, he takes care of his body. Again, it's just a true professional, like Kevin, you know.
Mm. When you're kind of preparing guys, preparing like off-season workouts for guys,
yeah,
is it one size fits all, or are you kind of looking at, you know, tailoring specific stuff for specific guys?
No, I mean, yeah, there are some drills that, you know, that are the same, but no, every guy's different. I'm a big fan of working on your strengths as well. I think too many players work on their weaknesses, and it's like in the NBA, as you know, you just gotta be good at a couple of things. You don't need to be good at everything. I mean, there are guys that make $100 million rebounding and blocking shots, mm-hmm, and screens, you know. You know, so with Steph, like, are you going to work on 7 dribbles inside out into a dunk at the rim? No, you're going to work. Steph, let's go from 51% to 54%. You know, no, KD and those guys, yeah, you work on, hey, let's add a floater to your game. Let's work on jumping off the wrong leg. Next summer, maybe we'll work on a step back three. Whatever it is, yeah, you want to add a couple of things. I do two a summer, maybe 3 things a summer. But I try not to stay away from, you know, the strengths. You know, Jason Capone, I worked him out for like 4 or 5 years. All we did was catch shoot. You know, why were you going to do 4 dribbles? You're not going to do that ever in a game.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think all these trainers now, they're just doing too much with these players. And keep it simple, man. It's basketball. Mm-hmm. Why are we doing, you know, 15 combs into a step back, pump fake 3? Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, so, and I've always kept it, you know, quiet. I've never, as you know, put stuff on Instagram. You know, I think guys respect that. They've never made it about me. And I've always, I never understood it. It's like, why do you want to give out what you're working on too? You know, so I've always been old school with that. I think now it's different. You know, it's like I think Dame Lillard said it 2 years ago. If it's not on Instagram, are you actually working out this summer? You know, so
that's the new thing, right? It's like those videos, the 60-second highlight reel. I mean, how many times
he made every shot in that video? It's unbelievable.
How many times do we see video of Ben Simmons knocking down threes? And has he taken one this year? I still don't think it's.
Yeah,
I have to double check, but I don't think he took one this year.
I don't think he's taken one. No, and it's like, and it's funny, and you know, I wish I could work out Ben, to be quite honest, because you need to work out. You need to work on like Derek, John, and Russell. I've had all three guys, and I've always worked on let's work on the 15-footer. So like those three guys, for 2 or 3 years, I literally, you can ask them, wouldn't even let them shoot a three in a workout. Let's work on your 15-footer first. Let's get that down. Let's master that. Then next time we'll go to 19 feet. Let's master it. You can't just go from, you know, an average foul line jump shooter, elbow jump shooter, to like, oh, let's work on threes this summer. No. Let's master this first. I mean, even Steph Curry, Ray Allen, you watch them work out. What are they starting at? 2 feet out from the rim. So, yeah. And those guys would always want to shoot threes in workouts. So I'm like, okay, make 30 out of 31 from the elbow, and maybe we'll move it out 2 feet. And it frustrated them, but, you know, you got to master that first and then work out. And I think it's all about patience. And I remember Derek had the 50-point game last year, and he made, like, you know, six threes or whatever it was. Minnesota Tribune called me and they're like, yeah, what'd you do last summer? I'm like, nah, man, this is 12 years in the making. This isn't like last summer, you know? And I think guys are impatient, and I've had to really tailor my workouts now, adapting to the new game, right? You know, when I first had Brook Lopez in 08 draft, it was in Robin, it was, you know, back down, little hook shot, spin, left-hand hook shot, elbow jumper, pick and roll to the rim. I had Brook 2 years ago for about 8-9 weeks in the summer. And I said, listen, and he didn't have a deal yet. And then he just got a minimum deal maybe 2 weeks later with Milwaukee. And I said, we're going to work on threes. That's it. That's it. You just got a minimum deal. You averaged like 18-7 last year. And I had to adapt, and he had to, and I always knew we could shoot. And it was funny for us. It was like full circle. It was like 10 years later after pre-draft, we're back at it working on something totally different. And he's going to shoot. I'm not sitting there. I'm the one that made him shoot that summer at all. We just had to shoot better and pick and pop and change his literally his game. And obviously, look what happened. He got $50 million. You know, so I've had to tailor not only obviously for players, but my whole scheme of training, because the game has changed crazy just in the past 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, and they always say Steph ruined the game. But if you get shooting this league, you know, like Ben and Giannis, they need to work on that, because when the 7-game series comes around. And, I mean, there were times you've seen it. Giannis and Ben were benched in the fourth quarter and, like, game six, you know, stuff like that. That's mind-boggling. This is an MVP and a guy who just signed a max deal, and they're not playing in the fourth quarter of a playoff game.
Now, Ben,
because it's 5-on-4. They play at the foul line.
And Ben would be, put in that dunker position just to, you know, out of the play almost entirely. I think they both work. I think it's I think Giannis has more of a shooting upside.
Yeah.
I think his shot doesn't look broken to me. Whereas sometimes when I see Ben shooting pregame, it's still kind of off 1 foot sort of thing, and there's still an awkward kind of spin on it. I think that and you're the trainer, but I think that's something like you almost got to deconstruct that and reconstruct it again.
Yes, and I think with Ben, it goes back to me training with Derek. You know, he does have to change a few things, but it'd be very tough to change a shot this, you know, in the stage of his life. But with Derek, a good example, it was like he just had a little hitch. So it was like, let's just foul through. Let's go back to fundamentals. Let's not. And I don't want to be like, all right, we have to change these 7 things. And then all of a sudden it's in his head. So with Derek, we're just, hey, man, let's work on this foul through higher. I remember just don't be short. He always said to himself, don't be short. Don't be short. Every time he missed, it was either swish or short. It was always a line drive. So we have to get that arc up. You know, lock your elbow. I always said 11 o'clock did 11 o'clock. He was shooting at 9 o'clock. And just little things that really going back to, like, you know, when you're 12 years old. And, you know, with Ben, I think it's similar to that. But, again, I don't think he was shooting any threes. Mm-hmm. Any threes in the summer. If he mastered that 15, 17 footer, that's fine. Now you're a threat at that, you know, in the playoffs, and guys really can't play you behind that dotted line. Mm-hmm. And they did with Rondo for years, you know, and when they lost the NBA Finals, Kobe was playing him at the dotted line. You know, so with Ben, to me, it's really just mastering that for 3 years. You know, it's funny, these Instagram stuff is just, you know, it's very deceiving. You know, it's a minute edit. Oh, wow, he made every three in that edit. It's amazing. You know, but and it's and it really is deceiving to the team, to the fans. You know, Markel Fultz, you know, he made every three, you know, in his Instagram stories 2 years ago, and everyone's excited. And we all know what happened there. So you got to be careful with that. But, yeah, Ben and Giannis, I agree with you. Ben needs a little more work than Giannis, but it's there. It's just a matter of putting the time in. With Derrick Rose, Russell, John, it was just Russell every single day. We work on pull-ups at the elbow every day. And now he's probably the best in the league at the elbow. And he just put the work in. That's all we did. It wasn't like, oh, Rob's is training. No, he just did it every day, 6 days a week, 1 hour. goodbye. You know what I mean? And that's it. And the hour we did was next level intensity. These other guys put in an hour, they might get 150 less shots because they're not going as hard. Mm-hmm. You know, so my whole thing is hour efficiency. I mean, KD would go 40 minutes sometimes, no water break, gone. Have a good summer. go enjoy the beach, you know? And that's why they're great.
Mm. You mentioned Derrick Rose a couple of times and youngest MVP in NBA history in 2011. And then the injuries come along and rob him of certain attributes of his game. I think in the last year and a half, he's recreated himself as it seems like from afar, he's, I don't know if accepted is the right word, but figured out what his limitations are and is working around them.
This is Kevin?
Derrick Rose, Derrick, I'm saying. Yeah, that's the last year and a half. Like, what have you seen kind of the evolution of him since the injuries took him?
It's amazing. It kind of reminds you a little bit on a different level of like when MJ kind of lost his athletic ability, like he was dunking, he kind of changed into the fadeaways. I think Derrick hasn't lost his athletic ability at all. I think he's just learned to play smarter. I think he's learned more about his body. These injuries, he's really attacked his body and stretched it out and the band work. But yeah, I mean, from afar, people don't realize how smart of a player he is. And I think he realized, I don't need to go in the lane every single time and draw contact. And maybe, he was just so aggressive at the rim all the time. I mean, he might be him and Russell, two most athletic point guards we'll ever see at this stage, I mean, in my opinion. So, and they've both been injured. But Derrick really learned how to really play with more finesse. He worked on his jump shot. And I think the more he worked on the jump shot with any other player, the more confident he got in it. The more Derrick worked in the summer, as you could see him, the first 1-2 years in the league, we'd work on the jump shot, but then he'd go into the games and he'd miss two and that'd be it. He shut it, he wouldn't shoot another jump shot. And I think now he'll miss five straight, no reaction at all, he'll shoot another five, no problem, because he's so confident in it. And I think that's a big thing. And now he's a vet. Is it, 12th year in the league, I think. Mm-hmm. So that's just crazy to think. And he's more of a leader. I mean, how many guys would have been MVP and then is totally okay with being a sixth man?
It's one of the hardest transitions to make. Like, and even guys that haven't gone through what Derrick went through physically, just the mental, the mental part. Like, no, like fuck you. I can go.
Yeah, I'm Derrick Rose.
I can go.
He don't care. And he looks at it too. Like, if you look at it, he'll come off that bench, but he's always in the end of the game.
Right.
So he knows what it is. But like, I give him credit, man. I mean, most guys probably wouldn't be able to put his pride to the side, but he's like, yeah, man. He just wants to win. He wants a championship before he gets out of this league, So he's more comfortable. He's got a great family now, three kids. I think he's really he's grown up and he's learned how to play a different way, and it's been pretty damn effective.
Did you notice anything last few years that, because if things didn't work out in Minnesota, he might be out of the league. If they didn't work out last year, he was a minimum guy in Cleveland. That didn't really work out, and all of a sudden he gets to Minnesota and something kind of clicks with him there. Did you notice anything?
He was comfortable, with his position there, coming up the bench, number one, number two. Tibbs, he was comfortable with him. And I think he stopped caring in a sense where he wasn't listening to the noise. He was just going to hoop. He knew he was fully healthy. I think the Knicks time and the Cavs time was a little screwed up, for various reasons. But he got to Minnesota, he's back to where he won MVP with Tibbs, that guy, and confident in that. And I think he just kind of like, I'm gonna play this out. I worked at it. I'm finally 100% healthy. And he took that, like I said, he took that role of just come off the bench and it was at ease with it. Mm-hmm. I think just mentally he was just totally clear of everything and happy with life. And he talks about all the time how happy he is with life now, and it really transfers to the court.
The pre-draft process still it amuses me. I think we're going to get to the point where like agents don't let players do anything. Like the combine will go away, and because already it's sort of, I've seen it sort of devolve in the last 5-6 years to guys used to come to the combine and test, and now they don't test. Guys would work out for a bunch of teams, now they won't. When they do work out, it's against a chair and a broom. Like the Yi Jian Lan sort of. What do you think of the way it's evolved over the last?
It's evolved a lot. I mean, I've had a lot of guys, early on, like 2007, 2008, it was more like more contact and actually like going at each other. Mm-hmm. And I get if you have clients, you know, put your clients together. But besides that, a lot of these agents don't want their top 10 pick going after, you know, with a late first round pick, mm-hmm. you know, and I kind of understand that. But, you know, I think with now, with synergy and TV and streaming, you're seeing these guys play 10 times anyway. So the agents are like, you've seen them play 20 times. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying, yeah, I agree. It's like, yeah, it's these guys aren't working out for teams. And it's funny because if no one worked out for teams, the lottery might go the same exact way. They've seen Zion and those guys play 20 since they've been 15 now. You know, so
Zion had more like national TV games right. than most of the NBA teams did last year. Like
it was amazing. So you know, the agents are doing their job. I get it. They're protecting their players. Yeah, but I mean, listen. Even if they do allow these players to work out, like you said, it's a BS workout. It's a 30-minute. Let's do what you're good at, and no contact, and that's it. And I've had agents tell me, "Hey, don't no contact, just one on zero, open shot." I mean, I can make 10 elbow shots with no one on me. You know what I mean? But that's just the way it is. And the agents are doing their job. But yeah, I think in the end, yeah, this combine stuff, yeah, it's better for second round picks, but these first round picks.
How much pushback do you get when you're involved in these workouts from like the team executives or whoever's in attendance? Like, are they like, come on, can we get more than this? I mean, you're in a tough spot because you're
working for the agent, right? Yeah. Oh yeah, no, I've had it. I mean, I was working on Dante Exum one time for with Palenka in Orange County. I remember Ainge came, and I've known Ainge for a while, and just said, "Hey, can you body him up a little bit?" Can you? I said, "No." You can ask Rob. No, it's fine. But yeah, he wanted me to do more content. I said, I you're not writing my check, you know. So, yeah, it's you know, and I've told the story before, but in 08 in the draft, and I did a combine for those seven of the top 15 picks. It was Rose, Russell, DJ Augustine, Brooke Robin, Anthony Randolph, and Gallinari. And it was the most intimidating time I've had at that point because it was R.C. Buford, Jerry West, Pat Riley. It was nuts. And I worked out Brooke and Robin. It was a good workout. Pat Riley walks down and says, you know, that was good, man. It was great. I'm thinking he's like dapping me up. I'm like, good. But it really was to get to Brooke and Robin. He goes, all right, guys, come over here. And this guy is like a polo on and khaki. He's bodying him up. You know, nothing I could do about that. That's Pat Riley. But he wanted to see, yeah, with the contact, what it was. And, but, yeah, that's the way it is now. It's not happening. And agents are just going to continue to do their job. And, hey, you've seen this guy 20 times in ESPN. What do you mean you got to see him again?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they look at.
When you had that crop in 08 in your gym, are they all scrimmaging each other at that point? I mean, how much are they going at each other?
No, they weren't scrimmaging at all. It was the same. I mean, I was in there more guarding them a little bit and maybe using a pad somewhat. So it's much more intense than I think now. But no, it was like the point guard group was DJ, Russell, and Derek, and then it was Brooke and Robin together.
Did Russell and Derek want to go at it with each other? I mean, Russell being... not getting the opportunity in the was the final four.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we would play one-on-one, but like behind closed doors. It's funny. They wouldn't compete against each other, but they would like in the workout. Like you see like Russell maybe inside out, boom, you know, dunk. And then Derek looks, oh, okay. You know, then he'd do something like crazy. And then Russell, oh, okay. It was crazy to see the workout. Well, the competition within the workout, you know. So that was the only really time they competed.
Mm-hmm. So as we... looking to the future here, I mean, is this, you could probably do this forever on some level working with these guys. Is that what you want to do? I mean, do you want to get with the team?
I have an opportunity to do the team stuff. You know, I want to make sure it's stable. You know, this day and age, not many jobs.
That's tough to find.
Exactly. I mean, who are the most stable teams now? It's Golden State,
San Antonio,
Boston, Miami, San Antonio, right? I mean, maybe Portland, you know, that's really it.
Yeah, Portland, you never know.
Right. For those four organizations, really four or five. And, so I'd have to make sure that's it. But, no, I enjoy what I'm doing. I enjoy not being restricted just to those guys on a team. And these guys are loyal to me, so I'm not going to do much until these guys are actually, like, retired and don't need me. You know, the Kevin Loves of the world and Rose and those guys, they've been loyal to me. So just to leave right now, you know, I could do it and they'd be fine with it. But my book just came out, doing a lot of corporate speaking now. That's actually doing very well with the networking part. But, yeah, it's a team is something I definitely have an itch for. It would just have to be the perfect opportunity, perfect, you know, stability to do that.
Mm-hmm. Let me finish with this. You work extensively with John Wall, another guy that's going to try to wake his way back. after an injury that has robbed players, you know, an Achilles injury is as tough as they get, I think, in today's NBA. It's the new ACL at this point. How does he find his way back? You've been around that guy. I assume at some point you'll work with him again. How does he find his way back to the player he once was?
Well, he's obviously not playing this year, and I agree with that. They're not rushing him back, which is great. Number one. Number two, you know, getting back to D Rose, I'm going to relate it to John a little bit. When you get injured like this and you're out for so long, it sometimes can be, and most times, a blessing in disguise in the sense where, you know, John was just naturally just gifted. You know, just, I mean, he worked hard, but like, he could just go on a court and just play and go out 22 without trying. So now he actually has to pay attention to his body, and he's going to learn much more about his body than if he didn't get injured. So having said that, I think, you know, with basically over a year and a half off learning about his body, maybe, you know, he's got to learn how to eat better because he couldn't move. So if he's eating bad, you know, he's going to put on a lot of weight up top. So he's learned how to eat better. He's learned how to take care of his body. I think he's going to miss a game so much. You know, we talked about this last night at dinner and how good he really can come back to this. And he really misses playing, you know, it's to play your whole life and not be able to touch a ball. And, you know, he knows how to do the band work, stretch before bed in the morning. So I think he'll come back at a good clip. And it's really good that the Wizards are not forcing him. There's no timeline. And that's the way it should be. And you're like, just like KD, you know, take your time, whatever you need to do. You know?
There are parallels to, you mentioned Rose. I mean, they both Rose and Wall, they both had kind of injuries before the catastrophic one. Yeah. You know, like then came the big one. And do you think it'll take, I mean, Derek, it took him some time to figure
it
his
might.
Way back.
And it's really, physically, I'm sure John's going to be fine, but it's more the mental part of it. I mean, Derek, you know, you got to trust your body. So now every time, you know, you go in and you get in the lane, you're thinking twice about contact. You might throw up a shot here rather than jump into a body, you know, whatever it is. So, yeah, it's going to take, you know, probably 40 games to, you know, half the season to really trust his body, trust himself, you know, get back into basketball shape. You know, training camp doesn't do that. It might take 10 games, you know. So, again, he's got to be patient with it. He signed his contract, so that's fine. There's no rush to, you know, sign a new deal or have a great year. But, yeah, it's going to take time, and it does. I mean, it took Derek, you know, 2 years to really get back to where, you know, he wanted to be.
The book is Network, Training the NBA's Best and Finding the Keys to Greatness. It is by far the best book written by a guy that scored a total of 20 points in 3 years at Syracuse.
I led the nation three-point shooting my senior year, for the record.
Wait a minute. I'm on 75% in three.
See that?
Points.
How about that?
So your senior year, you had 11 points total.
My first two games in, I was led the country. I was one. Chris Heron was two. All right, just for the record.
There's the tie.
And I made two threes in one game in the last minute. We're up 40. And Bayham was not happy with me. I shot that second three with shot clock off. So instead of winning by 40, we went by 43. And Pete Thamel came in the locker room and asked me, you know, why'd you shoot that three, man? Like, shot clock was off. Bayham was not happy. And my response to Pete was, what's he going to do, not play me? So I didn't care.
So Thamel already asking the tough question.
Yeah, how about
that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, he wanted me to be a source if something happened in the locker room, you know? It's typical Pete.
The book is terrific. The Forwards by Steph Curry. Check it out. It's an easy read. You can buy it at bookstores and online everywhere. Rob, thanks for joining me, man.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.